providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
Okay, welcome back. You are listening to the weekend edition of the Cortland Economics Report. I'm Al Cortland. I'm going to talk right now with my buddy Mickey Fulk, a.k.a. the mercenary geologist. Boy, is this guy making a name for himself, to say the least. Mickey, you've got some thoughts about copper. I do, too. I would like to hear yours first. You know, we've seen a big run-up, almost 50% since the 1st of July. The supply-demand fundamentals, in your mind, however, don't support a record copper price. Why is that?
Well, there's a number of reasons, but I will preface this, Al, by saying the short-term copper price has been driven, much as it was in the first half of 2008, by speculators, hedge fund buying, Chinese stockpiling, and hoarding. Mm-hmm. That said, I can give you a number of reasons that in my mind, argue for a long overdue copper correction. The projected world supply deficit, and there is one for the year 2011, but it's only equal to 8 days of current world daily consumption. So that's minuscule. Warehouse inventories, both on the LME and Shanghai, are now equal to 9 days of global consumption. Now, this is down from 11 days in March, but it is still exorbitantly high compared to the 3 to 4 days of inventories we looked at for a five-year period from 2002 to 2007. The list goes on. The Baltic Dry Index, which is a measure of global freight rates, is at a four-month low, and that would suggest that all underlying real commodities demand is weaker. Copper, which was in backwardation, which basically means the current price is higher than future contract prices, is no longer in backwardation as it was for over a month in November and early December. And that indicates lessening current demand, and that makes sense because we are in the season of low consumption for copper. It's a northern hemisphere winter, and most of the industrial development in the world occurs in the northern hemisphere. We are in Western world holidays right now, which I don't know many people are going to go to work much in the next couple of weeks building new buildings or laying electrical lines. Plus, we have the Chinese festival season, which is a very much a low consumptive season, and that comes along the entire month of February. So those are a few reasons, and basically the cure for high prices is high prices. So world record high prices for copper is going to cure some of the demand.
Well, let me ask you this then, in terms of, you kind of extrapolate what you're saying here, Mick, in terms of buying shares in publicly traded companies who are involved in the copper sector, it strikes me that you're probably not very bullish on that right now.
Well, I'm not sure that I would carry that over to copper stocks. You know, there's definitely not a direct one-to-one correlation. I would preface this to say that all junior resource stocks to me are at high levels right now. You know, we're pushing limits in my opinion. So if I was buying copper stocks, I would be trying to buy on weakness. I am a short-term bear on the copper price. I think price correction is long overdue, but I remain a long-term secular bull for copper and all other industrial metals commodities.
Well, why do you say that?
Basically, China, India, yeah. Indonesia, the BRIC countries, Brazil, increased demand. There's no doubt in my mind at this stage that the demand for copper will continue to increase at a historic rate of 4+% a year. We are not finding enough copper, and increasingly the BRIC countries and other parts of the undeveloped world, the emerging market countries, are demanding electricity, and that's all about copper.
You know, I was thinking about something when you were talking there, and that is, you know, just because the price of copper drops a bit doesn't really mean necessarily that the price of the stocks of, you know, of the publicly traded companies, as I said, involved in that industry are going to necessarily drop. It's you could still have a very, very profitable company if the price of copper is somewhat north of $4, or if the price of copper is 3.25. I mean, we've done pretty well on copper stocks when copper was as low as 2.75 or $3. So I guess the fact that the price of copper is going, you know, by your prediction, is going to go down a bit, really, really shouldn't have much bearing on the companies in that sector.
Well, I really don't think so. I'll make a bold statement here, and I'll say, if you're producing copper right now and you cannot make a nice profit at $3 copper, then you do not belong in the copper business. You want to go out in either the junior resource sector, even if you're going to go play the big boys like Freeport. You want to find companies that are in the lowest quartile of operating costs, because those are the best companies. Those are the ones that will survive if the copper price goes in the toilet. And I am in no way saying that's going to happen. I just think the price is overbought. It's driven by speculation, as all commodities markets are speculative markets, and it's overdue for a correction. And whether that's 10% or 30%, who knows? I did the same thing about this time last year. I predicted a correction of copper price in early January, and sure enough, by the end of January, we had a 20% correction in copper price. It's as much a seasonal thing as anything.
Mick, for listeners who are interested in investing in companies in the copper area, what parts of the world, in terms of where these companies' operations are, what parts of the world are you the most comfortable in?
Well, I will accept some geopolitical risk in the copper sector, but I go where the copper is. So Chile is a good place. I was just got back from, spent 12 days in Chile last couple of weeks. I am very bullish on the copper producing prospects in the southwest U.S. again, in Arizona and New Mexico, because I think with new exploration techniques, we're going to see major big porphyry copper discoveries in those old districts in, say, the next 5 to 10 years. Some very good companies, junior companies operating with major partners using the prospect generator model. And then, of course, Indonesia with copper gold porphyries that are very robust economically, but there's some geopolitical risk there. And then if you really want to get into geopolitical risk, there will be major copper gold discoveries made, and I think have already been made and are being explored right now in the country of Haiti.
Oh, yeah. Well, you've had some experience down there. That's a very tenuous situation down there right now, and we have talked about that a couple of times on the show in the past. What junior copper companies do you like right now?
Well, I follow the prospect generators pretty much in the copper space, so I am a shareholder, and Eurasian Minerals is a sponsor of my website. They are the aforementioned company, along with Newmont, with a discovery in Haiti. I am also a shareholder of Mill Rock Resources, another prospect generator that operates with gold projects in Alaska and very robust copper gold projects in Arizona. Their partners there include the Brazilian integrated metal giant Vale. So those are a couple of ideas that I can throw out right off the top of my head.
Okay, I want to give Mickey 20 seconds to tell folks how they can get to his website. Mick, Mercenary
Geologist. Well, I run a website. I am the Mercenary Geologist, and my website is called mercenarygeologist.com. You can go there. It's all free. It's sponsor-based, free to subscribers, and you can read my musings, my newsletter, listen to me talk to Al Corlin on the radio, and
among others.
And also I'm increasingly involved with television.
There you have it. Okay, Big Al's going to be right back.